Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hump Day. Hope everybody doing well. Normal day here in the middle of August. It's hot. What else is new? Maybe we get a little rain. Looked like there's some dark clouds over as I headed in. So I wouldn't mind, but hope everybody is doing well. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover said he will be in as soon as he can get a story up. We had the defensive coaches today after, Dan, a couple of interesting presentations on the new communication and laptops that college teams will have this fall.
Yeah, I got some education about the new technologies that are authorized for use in college football, the in-helmet communication between the sidelines and the players, and the iPods on the iPads on the
iPods. That's a throwback. No,
it's similar to iPods in that you're not able. The players wearing the communication cannot talk back to the sidelines. So it is a little bit like listening to an iPod in the sense that you're not.
They can talk back, but the sidelines won't hear them.
Yes, it's not a two way communication going on. And then the iPads, the tablets, and I guess it's conference by conference as to brand affiliations and things like that. The SEC is going.
Indeed have the iPad.
SEC going with Apple, and they're going to have iPads on the sidelines, and they're also going to have iPads in the coaches' booths that apparently can talk to each other.
Did he say it was 15 or 18? Was it?
Forget the number, but he said
a few.
There's a couple that are authorized for use, and I guess they've even pioneered some technology to make them easier to see in the sun, which would be an issue on sidelines. No kidding. In the SEC, they're using a lot of the same technology the NFL has utilized for these things with on-field technology and sideline technology and things like that. But yeah, some adjustment in college football as players will be allowed to listen to their coaches from the sideline, and coaches will be allowed to Don Dunn has talked about this before, that the value of being able to show players the play that just happened and utilize film from the game, not wait until Sunday or Monday to break down film with your players, but being able to do it in the middle of games is that's an important development in college football for coaches.
It is, and DJ Durkin was asked about the helmet communication, and he said he thinks, quite frankly, it's something that will help the offense. He said, but, you know, in the NFL, everybody huddles. In college football, hardly anyone huddles, and as a result, the defense won't be able to huddle. So he said, you know, in the NFL, when you're in the huddle and one player gets the information to the sideline, they can relay it right then in the huddle to everybody else. But it's not going to be the same. So you're spread out all over the field defensively because you can't huddle, or the other team or the offense could snap the ball and catch you out of position. So he said there's still going to be signals, and it's really going to be interesting. He said they've been working on it. But I thought it was really interesting, the information about the helmet communication. Five players will be designated prior to each ball game, and officials will know which five players can wear the specially equipped helmet, which has the communication in it. And now players
has a green dot on the back.
There's a green dot to signify that is an equipped helmet that would be live when it's on the field. There can only be one offensive player and one defensive player. But there can be no more than one offensive and one defensive player with the helmet communication. So you've got five players, and from what we learned today, it's going to be quarterbacks and a couple of guys on defense. I wonder if it'll be two offense, two quarterbacks, and three defensive players, or it could be three quarterbacks and two defensive players. Probably it'll be two quarterbacks and three defensive players.
Right, and two players wearing the technology can't both go out there with the technology, so teams will have to pay attention to that, sort of like not sending two players out there with the same number on defensive plays. You wouldn't want two linebackers.
That's right. It'll be a penalty. And officials, that's one of the things they will be looking for, is to make sure there's no more than one green dot on offense and defense.
And what it sounds like they'll do is they'll have helmets equipped with the technology and helmets not equipped with the technology, so that if, you know, suppose Auburn wants... Suppose Auburn wants Austin Keys and Eugene Asante to both wear the technology.
That's not unreasonable at all.
And they would not want both of them going out there with the technology in their helmets at the same time. One of them would have to swap helmets or swap the technology. Oh, no, I guess they'd have to swap helmets because the green dot would still be on the, you know, I guess. I don't know exactly how that would work.
Just listening after the presentation we had, they have non-equipped helmets for those players as well as equipped helmets.
Right. He talked about, you know, and part of that's because I guess they could have a backup helmet with the technology in it for Peyton Thorne, and I guess they'll do it that way, where they can swap out the helmets with the communications technology.
Because see, on defense, if you had, say, Asante and Keys that both had helmets that were equipped, and one of them was getting the signal something happened to that helmet, or they weren't in, the other one then could put on their equipped helmet. It's easier to make that switch defensively than it would be offensively. So Peyton Thorne probably has, I think he has three helmets. He's going to have his equipped helmet. I don't know why Peyton would have a non-equipped helmet.
Yeah,
would Peyton be in the ballgame?
Yeah, the linebackers might have.
Unless you're running a special, if you're running a trick play, maybe you'd have to have a special helmet that didn't have a dot on it.
But I think on defense, there's more of a concern of two players with the equipped helmets both being out there on the same play, especially because you might not designate a backup linebacker or something like that to go in for the starter. It might be your top two options inside, and they could play together.
And it might be a safety or something. So you might have that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking you're going to have your top two quarterbacks, and that's another reason why it's very important to know who your number two quarterback is.
That's true.
If you don't know, and you're the guy who turns out to be your second quarterback, goes in the ball game, and he's not been designated, he cannot wear a helmet that has the helmet comp.
No, you'll be going back to the old school ways of signaling, and I do wonder how much work teams are doing on non-technology assisted play signaling.
You better be ready in case, because that was another thing that was brought up. If the communications go out, both teams would then have to be without. And it's also interesting to know that there will be a specific person in the press box that will stop the communication, where they'll push a button and the communication will stop on both sidelines at the 15-second mark before the ball snapped.
Right, and so the I would think that this is, and I hadn't really thought too much about it, but I would think this is a response to what happened at Michigan.
Oh, it absolutely
is. I guess it's that would appear to be, you know, the idea that sign stealing or signal stealing could become more commonplace, and using nefarious methods to steal other teams' signs and signals was going to become more complicated. And so now they've gone to the NFL assisted system
with the NFL assisted
technology.
With the technology, and there were assurances that it's not hackable. Well, you know, we'll see, but it hasn't been hacked in the NFL supposedly. So, I mean, a couple of things have hit me. I wondered about this, Dan. What about hurry up offenses? I mean, you've got someone there in the box that's going to push the button at 15. What if you're trying to snap it before 15? Then you're able to tell the quarterback, hey, here's what's going on, so-and-so, snap it. If it hadn't hit 15, you're able to...
I imagine the person in charge of cutting off the equipment would have to cut it off the moment the play is live if you snap it before 15.
But I'm saying they wouldn't be able to push it before then.
Sure.
So I mean, so there is.
Well, no, if a quarterback's in the shotgun and
you're not huddling
left,
and you're just lining up and you've got plenty of time, you might be able to hear from the coach pretty much up to the snap if you can snap it at the 15-second mark.
Sure.
By the 15-second.
Now the other 10 guys wouldn't be hearing from the coach, so you wouldn't want to cue.
No, but if you have people in position, you have your play ready. Before the defense can adjust, go ahead and snap it.
Oh, sure, but I would say for, but actually, as far as like signaling the snap,
oh, right.
you might you might want to make sure everybody's on the same page rather than letting the coach.
I wonder how much you could practice, like, all right, we're going to line up and we're going to snap the ball at 16. Everybody just look at the play clock, and when it gets to 16 or it hits 15, we're snapping it. Because the communication's stopping then anyway.
Although once the other team picks up on that, you could be in a little bit of trouble. But
I guess
they'll know the second you're.
Well, they know that you're going to snap it, but they better be ready. But what if you don't snap it then?
That's true.
Then you wait for them to jump. I don't know. I mean, that's just some crazy stuff. But we got some good information today about the new technology. Then we have the opportunity to hear from the defensive assistants, including coordinator DJ Durkin. So we have plenty of audio. As I mentioned, Jason Caldwell will be joining us at some point here this hour. He was going to post a story or two from the interviews earlier today. So I heard Crime Dog and DJ Durkin, and I guess did you get the other three, right?
I got the other three players. Yeah, the other three coaches.
Yeah, because you got Josh Aldridge and then
Charles Kelly, and Von Trell.
Yeah,
yeah. Got the three.
And all right, I didn't hear much of Charles because that's DJ Durkin had come in just a little before.
Got about 14 minutes of Charles Kelly.
That's good. I got 13 plus from DJ Durkin. But I mean, I was just going to say I heard all the other coaches, even though I wasn't recording. I'd be recording at one table and listening in a little bit on the other. This is it's a very upbeat group of coaches. I mean, I think they're pretty darn pleased with what they have and how things have gone through the first couple of weeks of practice.
Oh, certainly. Charles Kelly seems to be, cautiously optimistic. I mean, it's a new position. When you think about the safeties, you know, the group that he's directly overseeing, it's a mix. I mean, Auburn lost most of their production from last year at that position. Caleb Wooden is back, but by and large, you know, most of the snaps last year at safety were being played by guys like Jalen Simpson and Zion Puckett, who aren't on the team anymore. And so Auburn is, I think that he's been looking to see growth. I think the arrival of Jerrion Thompson, Bug Thompson, at the safety spot, who is seemingly seized one of those starting jobs and looks like someone who, at least the plan is for Thompson to play a lot. Kelly's been talking about the evaluation going on with the other guys. And the big word, he said it a lot, was consistency. You know, he was saying that's a position where there are other spots where a team can weather inconsistency because you have insurance behind a defensive lineman.
That's exactly what Crime Dog was saying. It's like he said, we're protecting the second most important thing there is in football. He said, number one's quarterback, number two is the goal line, and if you don't, he said, if you make mistakes on the back end, it's going to be at the least a big play and usually points.
Yeah, the way Charles Kelly talked about it, he's like, yeah, when my players mess up, like everyone knows, like everyone can tell, and I'll get text messages from my friends and my family about it. And so that's something where it's vitally important for him to figure out who he can trust and who needs to be out there. It sounds like early on, and this probably isn't too shocking, sounds like early on going to be the veterans, going to be Bug and Caleb. They like Sylvester Smith. They like Terrence Love. They like Caleb Harris, who is somebody I don't think we've talked about as much as some of the other options out there at safety. I mean, those three guys are also in the mix. I think they like Griffin Speaks, who just got put on scholarship, local player. But early on, I would think that it's the experience of Jerrion Thompson and Caleb Wooden is going to make them sort of the A team. They're going to be the guys that are out there in the most important spots. And then you add to that with Sylvester and with Terrence Love, who he talked about quite a bit, and whatever the young options are. But yeah, hearing both of the secondary coaches emphasize, like, that's a position where mistakes are extremely costly. Like, that's a spot where, especially playing against the offenses you're playing in the SEC, like, it's a weakness will be exposed out there, and if a guy is struggling, there's really nowhere to hide.
And that's also a group that is very thankful when they have a lot of help up front, and that's something that I think Bontrell King Williams and DJ Durkin expressed. They're very pleased to have as many players that they feel they can rotate. And DJ Durkin said, hey, his philosophy is play as many guys as you can that the quality doesn't drop off.
That should be out there.
And he said he feels like they have at least six guys on the interior they can play without a drop-off, and that's nice for two positions.
Oh, I mean, you think about a starting 11 for the Auburn defense and how many guys not in the starting 11 look like they could, using the DJ Durkin definition of the guys who should play will play. Mm-hmm. Like, they're, I mean, it's a backup pretty much everywhere, and there are some spots where you get into, you know, I'll defer to Jason on this, but there are some spots where you get into the third stringer and even a guy who might have three players ahead of him nominally on the depth chart. Could still find his way out there to get some snaps, depending on how big the rotation is going to be.
Yeah, I think defensive front, I think we will see 10, 11 guys.
For four spots? Or for three?
For three.
Yeah, for three.
I think we'll see. I'm not counting the buck. I'm talking about for those three spots. I think we'll see 10, 11 guys when you start thinking about who's involved already. Because you go Keldrick Faulk, Zacchaeus Walker, Amaris Williams. You go three guys that really traditional defensive end spot. You go those three guys already there, and you go Jason Jones, Phillip Bleedy, Isaiah Rakes.
Trill Carter
is four.
Gage Keys
is five.
Malik Blockton.
Six. Bobby James and Travis, seven.
Right.
I mean, that's 10 guys already.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you haven't even gotten to TJ Lindsey, another freshman. You haven't gotten to a DJ Reed, if that guy were to step up. You haven't gotten there yet, and you're looking at 10 guys that I feel pretty solid that we'll see all those guys. And that's
be a surprise not to see any of those guys in the first half, yeah, and even the first quarter.
I think we'll see eight or nine guys in the first quarter.
The first quarter, and that's one of the things that Von Trell and DJ were saying is that just because a guy is the first one out there doesn't mean he's going to get the most time, and just because a guy's the third one out there doesn't mean that he might get the most playing time. Just depends on how things are going there in the game. But it's great to be able to have other players that can give them breathers, because as I think it was Durkin that said this. I mean, look, when a big guy gets tired, it takes longer for them to recover.
Yeah, it's not about rest. You know, letting a big guy get some rest so he can come back in the game later, right? It's like starting pitchers, Bill. Like when they've hit the wall, they're going to need a couple of days until it's their turn to go again. And yeah, preserving your guys as much as they can to keep them from hitting that wall. And we've said a lot, Jason. I think it's true at defensive line and receiver. And you don't necessarily need to have those guys set in stone as to who they're going to be. No. But a big reason why you rotate is because you want to preserve your best guys to have something left in the fourth quarter. And with Auburn, yeah, I think there's still a question of they're still figuring out who those best guys could end up being at receiver and defensive line, which makes sense because so many of them are new. I think that you, using your depth also gives you a chance to continue evaluating. You know who should be in that A team if it's a close game late against Arkansas
it's
or
hot
Oklahoma.
Hand. Yeah. You're in a position at those two spots where you can go hot hand. You don't have Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson where you go, look, okay, we're gonna make sure in the fourth quarter those guys are on the field. Hot hand. If Amaris Williams is absolutely terrorizing the guy in front of him, you go, hey, fourth quarter, maybe he's on the field and you're seeing some time
back out there, right?
Yeah, and so I love Vontrell King Williams where he says it's a rep chart. It's a rep chart, not a depth chart. I think the same thing at wide receiver. You go, it's a rep chart, not a depth chart. Now, I think at wide receiver, it's a little bit more of a depth chart. But I think defensive line, especially in the middle, I think it's absolutely, hey, because I think we know Keldrick's going to be there. We know Jalen McLeod's going to be there. For the other guys, hey, who's playing the best? That's the depth chart.
All right, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover making it in with us, as is usually the case here on Wednesdays. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. We're just underway here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover, part of the 24/7 network. Here in the studio, Drew at the controls. And Jason, we opened up the show talking a little bit about, the interesting information that we got today about the new technology. I mean, I didn't know, how many players or, how all that was going to work. It's going to really be interesting. I said just a little while ago before you got in, this is another reason why it's very important to know who your number two quarterback is, because you're limited to five players that have to be designated before the game who can wear the helmet comb.
Yeah, and so you think about offensively. If you're Auburn, you'll probably go all four quarterbacks.
Ooh, that will only leave one player on defense?
No. I think it's is it five players on
five?
Was it five total?
He said five, and that's why I
couldn't remember.
If it was
five
checking
on each side of the ball. I couldn't understand.
It is five players total. So you're going to have three offense, I guess, and two defense, and it'd be three quarterbacks and two guys, maybe two linebackers or linebackers.
No, it's five players on each side of the ball.
Okay, well that makes it a little easier.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because
I was thinking, if it's only five total.
Yeah, I think it's five on each side of the ball. So you're talking about quarterback, get to four, and you go Walker White.
Would you be tempted to talk to the center?
I think that might be a possibility if you get to a fifth guy, and we may run some Wildcat if we get in a bind, and whoever that guy is, maybe you put one of those just in case you go. Somebody that's played quarterback in the past that you go, hey, we might run some. It might be a possible. Defense is the interesting one to me.
I think that it might make it tougher to sneak that by anybody if the other team knows who the designated players are.
Yeah, I guess. But you're not sneaking that anyway. They know if that guy runs back there at quarterback, then
that's
not
true.
Yeah. Defense is where it's interesting, because in the NFL – the middle linebacker plays 97% of the snaps, no matter the score. That guy's normally on the field all the time. They're not going to take him off substitution. In college football, you're rotating. We're talking about rotating guys. You're talking about rotating players.
To me, the defense thing, we talked about a little bit before you got here.
Yeah, because
the fact that you can only have one guy with the technology on the field
correct.
Is something you're going to have to, because if it's Keys and Asante and safety or two,
you've got to figure out. Because I said the package thing in defense is going to be the interesting part. Who you have on the field in what package, depending on – so if you're going – so you go, okay, Keys, more than likely, but it may be Mosey, one of those two. You go, okay, well, that means you're not playing those two guys together normally. You could, but you're going to have to swap helmets if one of them comes off the field.
Non-helmet.
Yeah, I'm thinking you're going to have helmets ready.
They are. They're going to have multiple helmets for each one.
And DJ Durkin said, hey, the fact that nobody in college or hardly anybody in college huddles makes it much less he said they're still going to have to signal just about as much as they ever have.
Correct.
Defensively.
It's why it almost makes me think that would it be more beneficial for Jaron Thompson than it would be for a linebacker?
Yeah, I was thinking safeties.
Can you go, okay, look, because that's the one where you're communicating. He's a communicating guy. And you go, okay, up front, you're recognizing fronts and personnel more than anything. Outside, you maybe you're going, hey, look for this. This could be coming. Maybe you talk to your safeties a little bit more. So maybe that's a guy that is maybe involved in that role too.
Yeah, it's gonna really be interesting.
But it was great. We had videos of it on our YouTube page at Auburn Undercover. It was, I thought, a really interesting look at how this thing's going to work, how it will be used, the tablet part of it. That you think more about the helmet communication. The tablet part is going to be much more beneficial for teams.
Yes, it will. It'll be used constantly. Helmet communication will too.
But upstairs, it's going to be instantaneous. Mm-hmm. You run a play, boom, they're going to be able to see it on a tablet. Almost in time to make the next call depending on what happens on a play. So I think how quickly can you get used to it? How quickly can the coaches get used to it? Because they haven't had to do it. High school coaches have been doing this for a while. High school coaches have had tablets and streaming it and sending video to big screen TVs on the sidelines for the last few years. Mm-hmm. In college, you still can't do that. Even going into halftime, it's just on a tablet. You can't put it on a big screen, can't put it on a TV screen.
Why?
It doesn't make any sense, but yes. You should be able to.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
are they afraid that would give home teams a benefit?
Correct.
Because they would have the technology in home locker rooms.
Yeah, there's not as much room in a visiting locker room. You can't get an entire team together. Heck, you just about can't get an entire offense or defense together.
Yeah, I wonder, I wonder if maybe that would be
a lot of that. Whereas
I asked about, well, what happens if a team – because so like if a team – if the equipment malfunctions for one side, both sides have to stop using.
Correct.
And teams are responsible for bringing their own equipment – two stadiums, which I thought was an interesting one too. It's not a deal where the home team, the home stadium, is going to have equipment for both sides. You are responsible for bringing your own.
You will have plug-ins for your cameras, so to get your information to your teams, you will. Hey, here's your video port. Here's where your camera will be located.
It's similar to in basketball, and I guess in football too, the way they film. You know the way they've filmed, recorded game film that the teams get after the game is over.
Yes,
it's just it's correct. Like that, except you're gonna have access.
Somebody
to
asked a question in our thread. Said, "Look, what could this be used for replay? You're not gonna have, I mean, to challenge a call. You're not gonna have instant replay where you're going back and forth, which normally that's what it takes to go. Ah, he was in or out. It's gonna be so quick. This is gonna be top of the scoreboard." And 50-yard line at the top of the – almost the top of the stadium in front of the old press box, you're not going to be zooming in enough to see something that close. Absolutely,
though, we could see a situation where in the moment, using just the broadcast cameras, something is
there's something that obvious.
But still only going to get it back.
They cannot use it in the moment. Yes,
yeah, but. Like they're going to get it 3 or 4 seconds later, and you'd have to go immediately to the broadcast – and find it to go. Oh.
What could happen, and I'm not saying this will happen, what could happen this year is you could have a situation where something, it's unclear using the broadcast cameras what the correct call should be, and then later you're going to see something on one of these cameras. It's like, oh, actually it turned out he did fumble, or oh, his knee was down. But you're not going to be able to use that in the moment.
Yeah, because by the time you can get through those things and go, hey, we're going to challenge this one. They in college football, they're probably running the next.
Although
play.
coaches with the iPads, coaches and players with the iPads will have access to the broadcast feed. That's one of the three.
They will, but it's not like you're watching it.
No. You're not watching.
Yeah,
live.
You're getting after the fact.
Hey,
yeah.
The other thing that I was just thinking out loud about is the 15-second deal. There's some teams. They're going to be able to have communication right up till the ball snapped. If
correct.
You snap it with 15 seconds.
Correct. You're going to be
Ole Miss at times.
Yeah, get there and go. I mean, it may actually slow them down a little bit if you're trying to talk to the quarterback. I mean, you're talking about snapping the ball in 8-9 seconds. If you're communicating, you're not going to do that as quickly as you could if you're going boom, signal here. Because the quarterback, if you're communicating to him, realistically the reason why you would do that is to be able to communicate it to the rest of the team.
Right.
Well, you're not going to do that and go fast. So you're basically the communication for the quarterback is going to be, hey, here's your read here. Here's what we're looking for. The players have to just go because if you're going fast, you're not going to have time to communicate that. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Auburn will use it at times maybe when they slow down, but I still think we're going to see signals from the sidelines. I don't think this is going to be NFL because there's not a lot of huddles.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Love for you to join us.
You can also text the show, the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They're an Alabama-based firm offering incredible opportunities for students seeking a great career without attending a four-year college. You can call them up, 334-209-6355. Drive text box, 334-564-1840. Southeastern Industrial Contractors also sponsors the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
The Wednesday Drive, Bill, Dan, and Jason, come on in and join us.
To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the Drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive. 24 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, and Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here in the studio. Drew at the controls. We were talking a little while ago, Jason. I mean, I would say that the coaches that we've talked to, I mean, all of them, offensive, defensive, are pretty pleased with where things stand right now a couple of weeks into practice.
I think so. I think when you get into this, these guys have all been around camps. They all know that there's only so much you're going to get done because you've repped these same plays that you use in scrimmage, and you've seen, especially defense to offense, you've seen these things they're doing, so you kind of know what's going on. Defensively, the thing that just keeps jumping out to me, and I'm going to do something on it tomorrow, is versatility. Like, we saw a bunch of different fronts and looks and things they did on Saturday morning, and that's 7-8 days into camp. They have a lot of different players. We just talked about the depth on the defensive line. But you think about the buck position. You know, there's four guys, and, we heard, like, Joe Phillips is really taking some steps forward. Talked to DJ Dirk, and he talked about Robert Woodyard, how he's been the most improved guy in that room. And in the secondary, we know there's a bunch of different names. I heard y'all talking about all the guys that, you know, it's safety, and there's five or six corners mm-hmm. now with Amon Lane coming on and doing some things. There are lots of options, and with that becomes lots of things you can do within the framework of a defense. This is not 1993 where you go, hey, we're going to line up and go four down linemen, three linebackers, four guys in secondary, and that's how you play. Now there'll be 3-4, 3-3, 3-2-6. I mean, we're going to see a lot of different things, and because of that, there's a lot of different players that give you some of the. To me, it's versatility on offense. I mean, on defense, offensively, I think it's just continue to learn more about what the players think of what they're seeing, because that's important. And the players have an absolute confidence that this is an offense that's going to be a lot better. But the coaches feel that too. I think. Mm-hmm. You go back to Saturday. You know, people were like, there's been a lot of, gnashing of teeth over
concern about the lack of offense.
Yeah, here's the thing: they had very little in, and they're not going to show anything because there's people in the stands. Right. That's what happens.
That's big.
And the other part of it is too, they're not scheming the defense; they're running their offense. Well, when you get into a game, you scheme the defense, going, okay, this is what we're going to do based on what they do. You don't do that in a first scrimmage. You go, hey, here's what we're running, and you run it.
And the defense knows.
They know what you're doing.
What you're going to run.
Yes, and so there were a couple of checks, a couple of those things, but it's not like you have the entire offense at your disposal, and they didn't do very much of that. And so, yeah, I think you can see the talent level. That's the first thing. The talent level's improved. Can they go out and make a few plays in a few games? That's what you have to do. Mm-hmm. I talked to Charles Kelly today, and we were talking about thinking back to like the 2013 like national championship game. He's at Florida State, and he's like, Coach Dye used to talk about every time, there's four or five plays in a game, and you don't know which four or five those are until it's over with. You don't know the next play is the biggest one. No, well, it may not be. It may be a play that's already happened three plays ago. That's what you – can you win those plays? If they had won those plays last year in a few games, they went 8 or 9 games. But can you make those plays? That's the thing you have to look for this year. I think they're in a better position to do that, though.
We're all looking at each other. Yeah. So no, I agree. I mean, that's one thing that we've talked about, and we've told people. I mean, the first thing you see is this team looks like. I mean, they look like an SEC team now. Now they've got to get out there. They've got to get out there and play. Thus far. I mean, there has not you look around the league, and one of the things that I know that Hugh Freeze was concerned with, Jason, was, exactly how do you treat this? You've got to be physical enough, but, boy, you keep looking around, and every day somebody's losing another player. Texas has lost two running backs.
A&M's lost guys. Oklahoma's lost a wide receiver. It's the fine line, and people go, we got a bunch of players. Yeah, but you don't have an unlimited supply.
And there are a reason that some of them are the first guys out there.
Correct. So, it is the fine line that you have to walk. You know you have to be physical. You know you have to get out there and have some contact, and your defense needs to tackle some and do those things. But you have to weigh the pros and cons and going, okay, you're going to tackle – maybe you tackle Sean Jackson. You don't tackle Jarquez Hunter and Damari Austin and, mm-hmm. and Jeremiah Cobb a bunch. You tackle Sean Jackson and some of Justin Jones and some of those guys.
And who's doing the tackling? too. That's the other question. Like, yeah. Who needs? Who really needs?
I mean, young guys. You need to tackle a little bit. But again, you're like we saw Keldrick Falk. I mean, just in a couple of those live reps, get kind of pulled down, and you go, man, one play like that, it changes the season. If you lose the a player like that, and so what you don't want is somebody to roll up on, and that's the part about going live. You got to stay off the ground, and you know that's what Hugh Freeze was talking about. He's like, look, it's not that going, live or being physical. That's not the issue. The issue is, can you do that while staying off the ground and knowing how to practice? And when you have a bunch of young guys, that's hard to do because those guys are going out and they're trying to win a job. They're trying to go out and show. So you're playing to the whistle. But here, you play to the whistle, and that means when you make contact, thud means thud. It doesn't mean thud and then fall to the ground because that's when guys get hurt.
We were talking about the how you decide who gets the special communications and the helmets, and that's one reason why. And maybe it's not as urgent if you have five helmets each side, but it's a reason why you would want to have a pretty clear depth chart at quarterback. You'd want to know who the next guy up is, and have have confidence in him, especially if you have to designate only one backup. It's a little different. But what's your sense of what the backup quarterback race looks like between not that Walker isn't also a factor, but it does feel like it's mostly Hank versus Holden.
Yeah, and I don't know that I learned anything Saturday. I thought Hank started strong. Holden probably played better toward the end of it a little bit. But what you don't know what they're supposed to be doing. Is it the right read? Did they do the things they're supposed to? Those are things you don't know by just watching from – here's the thing. It may have been a good throw but the wrong spot. Or vice versa. It may have been a really bad throw, but okay, well, it worked out. You may have thrown a pass to where you're supposed to throw it and the receiver not be there. And it looks bad on the quarterback, but technically it wasn't his fault. Those are things you don't know. The only thing I know right now is that there is an absolute clear number one.
Yep.
And I think this next couple of days, my guess is they'll probably do some sort of scrimmage again Saturday.
Yep.
That's when we'll start to get some clarity because I think they will throw them into the fire a little bit more and then put a little bit more stress on them to see what happens.
It's different, though, as far as the clarity that we were looking for 2 weeks before the start of the season now and 2 weeks before the start of the season then, right? I mean, that's
– Yeah, because you're probably narrowed down now to – and we saw it even Saturday. Walker was with the threes. Those guys were with the twos, and Peyton was with the ones. This week you'll probably see those two guys split reps again and use more of them probably just in the twos and try to figure that out. That's the process now is going, okay, how do you narrow it down? We feel good about this guy? Okay, then we got to start getting him more of the two reps. He's got to get more of those as you prepare for a season.
All right. Again, we don't know what everybody is supposed to be doing on every play, but Jason, I'd love to get your thoughts on a couple of guys that have caught your eye. Maybe guys that you weren't expecting to see as much who look like they're really taking a step forward.
Yeah, I mentioned like a guy like Robert Woodyard, J.C. Hart. Those are guys that are talented. You knew it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Amon Lane had a really good day, and he's kind of settled in a corner. Missed most of his senior year at Moody with a knee injury. He's come back and done some good things. I think he's in the mix, and you can probably play four or five.
Yeah, he's another guy that wasn't here in the spring.
No, and you could probably play five guys because of special teams and see some of those times. Offensively, it's not a surprise to me that Malcolm Simmons and Perry Thompson and Bryce Kane all look the part physically. Bryce, obviously – more in the mix with the first group because he was here in the spring and he's got a more base of the offense than those other guys. You can see it when the ball gets in their hands or when they get in a one-on-one situation.
Mm-hmm.
They're ready to play now. Can you get them in the right spots? Can they know what to do enough to kind of mix in and or is this going to be more specialized? I feel like it's going to be still more specialized early on. Get to the middle of the year, though. Perry Thompson, Malcolm Simmons could be absolutely more every role, every mix. I do think we'll see them. So you see those parts, but Malik Autry's probably the guy. I mean, not Malik Autry, Malik Blockton.
Yeah.
when you think about, because that defensive line is not a spot where you go true freshman jumps in there.
And there are a bunch of guys that have played a lot of college football.
Yeah,
but to be clear, Malik Autry could also be the guy. Like, that's pretty good player.
But Malik blocked him when you look at it. The fact that he's mixing with the first group.
Right.
You know,
he's mentioned just right there with the others.
I think in a dime package where you go 3-2-6 and it's 3rd and 12, Malik Autry could absolutely be in the middle of that with Keldrick Falk and Morris Williams or however you want to do it. You could have him as part of a first package on the defensive line, which is crazy to think about for a true freshman.
The last few Auburn players to impact on the defensive line or the front seven as true freshmen had names like
Derek Brown,
Marlon Davidson. And Derek Hall, who's playing a lot, Owen as a true freshman. It takes
physicality, explosiveness, but also understanding.
Yep.
And he has those things, the background with Marcus Harris and his brother and playing. He's watched it, and he's seen what it's taken to get to that level. But he was also there even in bowl practices. So he got to go, oh, man, all right, now. Then he got to spring. Then he got to summer. So he's had such a head start. DeMarcus Riddick, I think, is the same guy. You look at DeMarcus Riddick and go, to see where he was, in bowl practices and out in San Antonio, and to see him now, that's a guy that absolutely looks every part of an NFL linebacker down the road. And that's fun to see.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Yellowhammer, hang on. You're up when we come back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Tailgates online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of hour number one here on the Wednesday Drive with Bill, Dan, and Jason Caldwell. Let's get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar and Yellowhammer. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon, everybody. I was wondering, about it's exciting to hear that Thorne has improvement on the offensive line and he's got better targets to throw to, but don't we have a pretty decent little running game, too, and how does that patch into the picture?
Yeah, I mean, the base of this offense wants to be RPO, which means run, pass option.
Mm-hmm.
They want to run the football, and it's going to be – it's going to be a big part of things because you have to be able to run it for that to then take effect. Because, if you're 3rd and 12 the whole game, it don't care what you do. It's going to be hard to go win and move the football. So they want to run it. Jarquez, Damari Austin, Jeremiah Cobb, and Thorne himself being a part of the running game like we saw last year. Yeah, it's going to be a big part of things for them. And, offensive line-wise, I think the middle is going to be good. What do the tackles look like in a run game? I think you'll have some help from the tight ends. Percy Lewis is a big, huge guy, but he's never played in a ground-and-pound kind of system before. Mm-hmm. He's been more of a pass rush guy. But I think the run game will absolutely be a part of it. And I think that's one of those things, too, as you get into a system where you're going, hey, let's game plan for this team, then you start to figure out, okay, what are some runs that work – that's when those things pay off. It's hard to go, hey, we've seen this every day. Let's go run the ball against this front like we saw some on Saturday.
What about the toss sweep? Wouldn't that be a nice addition?
Nobody's under center anymore. That's the toss sweep is under center play, and you're just not going to be under center. We might see some from the Arkansas Razorbacks this year, but I don't know that many other teams you'll see much of that anymore.
You get the ball. You can get the ball outside quickly without doing that. So,
yeah.
But, I mean, that's the point, is to try to get the corner quick.
Although, what was was when we talked to Coach Freeze last week before the scrimmage, he mentioned that they'd run some sort of toss play to Malcolm Simmons.
That's a little jet sweep.
Yeah, and he mentioned that they'd been running. I mean, they have outside runs. It's not. It may not look as the way it did when Joe Gibbs was coaching Washington or something like that. But they'll. They'll find ways to get it outside, Yellowhammer.
All righty. Well, thanks.
Appreciate the call. Jason, man, time has flown. We're just about out of time. It is a busy time. There's a lot going on. I mean, with preparations for the season. I know Georgia's playing tomorrow, right? Or is it Friday?
There's a game playing right now.
Is that right?
Yeah, they're playing Wednesday at 4:30 Eastern time. There's two,
on August the 14th.
Yeah, they're playing this afternoon. So yeah, we have a game Friday night at Milton. So Milton and Buford play Friday night. So I would guess conservatively, probably 24 Division I players between seniors, junior, sophomores. Buford probably has 10 to 12 2026 Division I guys alone. So yeah, it'll be a really talented group of guys that we get a chance to see on Friday night.
Yeah, so you got, I mean, you'll be covering that and covering, you know, Auburn practice as they get ready. I mean, we're getting closer and closer. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you guys are doing.
Yeah, check us out, auburnundercover.com, part of the 24/7 network. So you can find us there, Auburn Undercover on YouTube. Obviously, find me on Twitter, Instagram. I do a little bit there, @ITATJason. So tons of stuff going on. We got a whole lot of stuff from the information we gathered today.
Great stuff. Thanks again, Jason.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, Jason Caldwell, Auburn Undercover, joining us as he does on Wednesdays. We're halfway done with the Wednesday drive. We'll open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in hour number two.
Live at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Wednesday drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover with us in hour number one. Hope you had a chance to hear JC. I mean, always has great insights. So, we hope you caught that. If you didn't, though, there is something you can do. You can check out the podcast.
That's right. Podcasts of the Drive, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They're an Alabama-based firm offering incredible opportunities. 334-209-6355 to learn more about Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Search for The Drive with Bill Cameron on your favorite podcasting platform, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center.
We'd love for you to join in here in hour number two. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, you can call us on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and that number is 334-321-1390.
Drive Text Box, also presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, 334-564-1840. You want to get in on the show that way.
All right, today we had an opportunity to hear from the defensive side of the ball, the coaches on the defensive side, led by coordinator DJ Durkin. We've got some audio that we can run for you. Again, we talked about a few of the things they said. Again, you can see the coaches are pleased that they have the depth that they do. Now, there in some areas on the back end, especially the lack of experience is a concern. But there's not a concern about lack of talent, but it's lack of experience. And as we were saying in hour number one, that's where a mistake can result in at least a big play and most of the time points. So that's going to be very critical. But the other thing is, if Auburn can get after, you know, quarterbacks and prevent, you know, quarterbacks from having time. I don't want to remind anybody of the last, you know, the end of the Alabama game by any means. But, I mean, not that much time. But just you can keep them from having just the normal amount of time, then they will that will greatly help your secondary. And listening to, you know, Josh Aldridge was the first coach that came in, right? And he has both the defensive ends and the Bucks. And I think he's really excited about the talent in his room, the ability to get after the quarterback.
Well, the players he brought back from last year, guys like Keldrick Falk and Jalen McLeod, and how they could improve in their second year with Auburn, but then also the players they've gone out and recruited. I asked him about Kieron Crawford. He talked about recruiting.
He said he called him an elite pass rusher.
And told stories about recruiting Kieron Crawford to Liberty back when Kieron was coming out of high school. Yeah, he mentioned that too, that he was familiar with Kieron from back when Kieron was a football recruit coming out of Hugh Freeze's old stomping grounds in Memphis, and consider, yeah, they looked at him for Liberty. He ends up going to Arkansas State. Now he's at Auburn coaching, playing for these coaches. But yeah, I think there's it's not as though, I think it's true on both sides of the ball, Bill. It's not like there was one glaring problem that Auburn needed to address and everything else was fine.
No, you're right.
From last year, there were issues.
It was overall depth. yeah. I would think. I mean, on both sides of the ball.
And you, and you had multiple
positions.
And even at places where you felt pretty good about the production you got, you had to replace players like the defensive backs that moved on to the NFL, or Marcus Harris, or Owen Papo. Like, these guys were, you know, a big part of what Auburn was trying to do with the Owen was a year before, wasn't he? But still,
yeah, he
like it's still, but either way, Marcus and the guys in the secondary that you had to move on from. By the way, Eku Leota having a strong preseason in the NFL had a big game recently. Auburn name we hadn't talked about in a little while. Not now in the NFL, but the. No, to move, you know, having to find solutions at those spots and having to, you know, having to improve the. I think they, you got the sense from the defensive coaches they feel pretty good about about where they are and what that could mean when the season gets going.
Yeah, and if we get a chance, we'll let you hear some of the comments. But I was just thinking. I mean, look at all the positions we've talked. You know, we talked about the defensive line with you've got four. Interior players that Auburn brought in from the transfer portal. You've got with Gage Keys and Trill Carter who were here in the spring, and then Isaiah Rakes and Philip Bleedy have come in over the summer, and then Keyron Crawford there at defensive end, and Jaron Thompson on the back end, Darian Maosi at linebacker. I mean, those are veteran players that have come in and been able to not all of them guaranteed of stepping in. I mean, obviously they can't all step in and start because you don't have that many spots, but it's tremendous when you're able to add that really good combination. I like what we've heard from all the players, the experienced guys coming in and really taking on leadership roles and helping bring along some of the young talent, because Auburn's got some really talented young players, either freshmen or first or second year players, that are not going to have to be thrown in there now. If they're good enough, they're going to play, like we've talked about with Malik Blockton. But some of those guys that now have that luxury of being able to be mentored by players that have been playing Power 5 football for 3 or 4 years, as well as getting some playing time, earning some playing time themselves in the SEC.
I mean, I think the Auburn would love to have a team full of veteran experience, but I think they also recognize you got to be building for the future, and you need to be recruiting the best players out of high school. And those guys don't get to be like top 5 stars from the class of 23 aren't 4 year veterans yet. Like that's not how this works. And so, you know, there's going to be veteran experience at certain spots. There's going to be youth. And potential at some of these spots, and I guess figuring out how to get it all going in the same direction is the big challenge for this Auburn coaching staff.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. I mean, anything that you know, you got any questions?
Was there a coach you really found enlightening? Is there somebody you'd really like to? I mean, I think
DJ Durkin.
See, I didn't get to hear any of DJ Durkin.
Is great.
I was talking with Charles Kelly, you know, and Von
Trell. Charles is always great, really, yeah. Really good. But I just thought it'd be cool if we started defensively with DJ Durkin. I mean, he's the coordinator. He's got linebackers, but he can talk about. He talks about pretty much all the positions while he's talking, but then you can feel the energy. We've heard so much from all the defensive players about the energy that DJ Durkin brings, and I mean he's got it even there when he's sitting at the table with you. You can tell he's excited about this. He's ready to get out there and see what he can be doing. And he's been around some really, really good defenses, and I think he feels like this has the chance to be another one. And that's something I think that should be really exciting for Auburn fans to know that this is going to be an aggressive defense that has the ability. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you can be too aggressive. You can go back to the old days of Joe Lee Dunn where you're blitzing on every down and you may not have the best players. You're going to make some big plays, but you're going to get a lot of big ones up. I'm not saying that this team won't give up some big plays, but I think they'll have more than their share of big plays that they're making, and they're not going to be unsound either while they're doing that.
And that's you know, last year's team. I think they were doing their best with the best they had. You know what I mean? Like but I think there were times when
it was more of a bend.
Yeah, there were times when it felt like they didn't want to put too much pressure on the secondary by overloading the pass rush and sending the blitz on a cage. They probably didn't have guys which
in retrospect
I know
puts
I know.
Too much pressure on your secondary when a quarterback has all night.
Well, when you don't, there's also a difference between blitzing and not sending and four,
not rushing.
Yeah, not sending three or four. You know, but it's but it's no. I think that, and you also had a situation where I think at times, especially as McLeod sort of battled health issues.
Oh yeah,
you weren't.
I don't know that he was completely healthy. All year,
you weren't winning with three or four trying to get to the quarterback, right? Like that's something they hope.
I think there's a really good chance that they can do that this year, but I think there's a good chance also that at any time someone other than one of the front guys could be coming after the quarterback.
Sure, and the thought that you know whether it's young players like Amaris Williams and Joe Phillips, you know, could be and DeMarcus Riddick could be contributing on those kind of plays, but you also have veterans like Jalen McLeod. It's crazy to think of Keldrick Falk as a veteran, but like he's also
what did Vontrell? Vontrell said. It was Josh Aldridge was saying he looks like a junior, he acts like a junior, he plays like a junior.
Yeah,
a junior, and that would be a junior who is ready to move on to the NFL. I mean, he plays like one of those kind of juniors. Fortunately for Auburn, you've got him for this year and next.
Well, and I think a guy like Keldrick, a lot of the playing time that he got last year would come to a guy in his sophomore year.
Right.
So it's like you'd play, you'd spend a year adjusting. You know, think about JC or Sylvester Smith. Like those are players who could play a lot their sophomore years, their second years. They'll be redshirt freshmen.
Yeah, that's more the norm of just, you know, having to sort of learn the difference that transition from high school to college.
And a year from now, if either JC or Sylvester Smith plays a lot, you'll think about them as, all right, well, they had a year to adjust, they had a year to play a lot, and now they're juniors ready to go full speed. Keldrick had both of those years in year one. He had his year to adjust. He had his year to play a lot. And now, like Aldridge says, he's virtually a junior 12, 13 games into his college football career because he started 8 or 9 of them.
He's a 19-year-old junior.
Yeah, a 19-year-old junior with
who has 3 more years of eligibility. But I mean,
enjoy him while you can.
Be very surprised if you get anything past his true junior year.
Yeah, enjoy Keldrick Falk while you can because he seems like that kind of player. And I mean, Bill, he's going to start his ninth or tenth game, something like that. So yeah, I mean, it's exciting stuff.
Yeah, we will see. We'll let you hear some of the interviews with the defensive coaches. Again, love to hear from you. Your calls come first, 334-321-1390. We'll get to our first break here of hour number two on the Wednesday Drive.
382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. And as we have mentioned, today we had a chance to talk with the Auburn defensive coaches. And we thought we'd let you hear from defensive coordinator DJ Durkin.
DJ, I guess just how's camp going after the install of the spring and this summertime? How's it going for you guys in defense?
I'm very pleased where we're at. Our guys have done a really good job of preparing, showing up every day with the right mindset. They're grasping the defense really well. The number of our mistakes is really down. When you look at the ones and twos, really low. Obviously, some guys down the line got to keep picking up and going. But our effort and just the togetherness of the defense is really good at a high level.
There's a lot of bodies moving in and out. How fun is that as a coordinator, though, to have a lot of different options on defense?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's what it's about. I think, especially with the design of the game nowadays, you can play so many teams that are spread and no huddle and it's moving. You've got to have options where you can have fresh bodies on the field. I mean, it's just natural. I mean, we're going to ask these guys to turn and run the ball every snap. And when you're doing that over and over again, you know, that's hard to do for 65, 70 plays a game when there's no huddle. And so you need to have that. And so we're continuing to work to create as much depth as we can at all spots. I love a room when a lot of guys have a role. I think, like, you know what I mean? You feel a part of something, and I know what my role is, and I'm going to go do a good job with it.
One of the things we hear pretty much every player we talk to is your energy. Even the other defensive coaches, how important is that to you to go out there and be the most energetic guy to set the tone in that way?
Yeah, I think, like, I mean, that's natural to me, so I'm natural to my personality, but I do think on defense, like, you've got to have energy. You got, like, it's part of it, right? the whole mentality of the defense is different. It's one step further. Like, you know, an offense, defense guy come together. If you stay together, right, the offense wins. So if you're blocking a guy, you win. We got to get off that block and get to the ball. It takes an energy and effort level to play at that. And so I think just guys respond to that. I think our defense responds to that. And so, you know, I'm glad they're saying it in a positive way. I definitely bring that every day for them.
Who are some of the guys that you really like what they've done since this spring, guys that have stepped it up and made a big move?
I think, like, along our defensive front, I like our depth. We've created some depth. I mean, you look at all these guys up there. There's some guys that have been here, and there's some guys we got in the transfer portal, and then there's some freshmen. It's a combination of all those, like, newcomers in that are really, I mean, it's day-to-day who you can point out who had a great day in competing, and that's a great thing for me. Like, when you have depth up front, you need to have that in this conference. If you want to be successful and consistent, you got to have it, and I really think we're developing that now.
Got to be pleased with when you're talking about new guys like Kieran and Isaiah and Philip that have come in and weren't here in the spring have been able to step out there and get right into the rotation.
Yeah, no doubt. Those three have really made a difference. And what I love is the response of the other guys around them. That competition has made everyone better. You know, like that's the right response you want to have. If you're a player and, you know, a new guy comes in and he can do things to help us, like, guys are embracing that, and then they're going to compete and make sure, hey, man, like, remember what I can do too, you know. And that response has been awesome. And then, you know, with Malik and some of these freshmen and Morris, and, I mean, these guys, they can play and help us as well. And so, you know, we're going to keep – we're in a good spot now of repping a lot of guys, and we're going to keep doing that as long as we can and carry that on the games.
Talk about Malik, kind of got the start, I guess you could say, for the scrimmage. What did that mean for him? Is that kind of indicative of what he's been doing?
That was based on a rotation. We haven't gone starters and all that yet, but Malik in particular has done a great job. He's had a really good camp. He's had a lot of clips that have shown up, like stuff we point out to the defense in terms of his physicality and understanding of things. Like, he doesn't look like a freshman out there.
The versatility of the group too. Kelvin's got to play two or three different spots. Malik can do that. Amaris, how valuable is that when you start to talk about packages and doing different things?
Right. Like, versatility is one of the best traits you can have for a guy on the defensive side of the ball, because you don't have to always sub in, sub out to match the personnel of the offense. You can call more things. Like, sometimes you have guys that are, I can only call this when these guys are in, you know, and that becomes a little difficult where, hey, you want to present multiple looks for the offense. It puts the pressure on them. When you have guys on the field that can do multiple things, it just makes it easier.
A lot of young guys on the back end. What are your thoughts just on what you've seen from the secondary here in the first couple of weeks?
Yeah, love their competitiveness. They got good energy. We were talking about earlier. And they're doing a good job competing. Those guys are fighting for the reps and wanting to get out there. You know, we got to continue to solidify things. As we know, like, being assignment sound in the back end is more important probably than anywhere else on the defense, because assignment busts back there equal points or big plays. And so those guys being honing on that, I like, they've taken the mentality, they understand the importance of that, and they've really been good about that. But as always with young guys, you got to make sure we're trying to present all the different looks to them to make sure they're having proper response and communication. You know, the most important thing is being on the same page, communicating to one another. And a lot of times young guys get out there and they don't want to communicate. It's not natural. So we're working on that. A bunch of those guys are learning how to be on the same page with the guy next to you.
Is that where Jaron Thompson has become really valuable because of his experience? We've heard he's become a vocal guy already.
Yeah, extremely. JT's so comfortable. I mean, he's played a lot of football. He's very comfortable communicating, making calls, taking charge back there. And, you know, along with the things he does physically really well, that's a major part of it for him.
How good has Isaiah Rakes been? In particular, you know, obviously his knowledge of your defense.
Right, yeah. The familiarity that we have is great. And I mean, he's had a really good camp. I think the best part is he's won the trust of his teammates because of how he's practicing, how he's playing, and they're seeing it. And he is a great teammate. Isaiah is just a really good person and a leader. And, you know, he wants to do right by his teammates. And so they've grown, you know, good with him in a short amount of time, and which has been good for us because we're going to count on him.
Does that help you having somebody that you've seen him in your system? You know exactly what he's capable of.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what he's capable of. You know what you're going to get from him. And I think he does a good job of communicating to the guys around him too, where, like, he knows some of the things where, like, sometimes a player may not want to ask a question. Like Isaiah can feel that and answer a question for him because he's been around it for a couple of years and kind of knows how, you know, how it should look.
How's your linebacker group coming along? What have you seen out of those guys?
I love their experience. We have a lot of guys that play a lot of football in that room, which is awesome. And they have the right approach of, like, iron sharpens iron. They're all competing for those reps in those spots, make no doubt about it, but they're doing it in a way that's supportive of one another. And we're going to count on all those guys. You know, I think, you know, again, playing the linebacker position and guys running the ball and all that, you need to have some guys that get fresh and get in the game. And so they've gotten better and better. They have a good understanding of the defense, and they're doing a good job communicating.
We've heard so much about JC this preseason. I guess he was a guy, he admitted earlier this week, he felt like he needed that development. He needed time to come on. Where have you kind of seen the biggest difference from him, maybe from his brain until now?
Probably just at his confidence level. You know, where it's like, line up, I think I can, I probably can, to where now, like, he knows what he can do. And I think he's still just scratching the surface, to be honest. That guy has like, top-notch ability, and he's learning a new spot and all those things. But he's been productive throughout this camp. I mean, you watch him practice, he's making plays on the ball. He's in the right position where he's supposed to be. His confidence and his comfort with playing is going up.
Will the helmet comms make a big difference for you, you think?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it will make a difference, but not quite the same difference, I think, probably the design of it. Like, in the NFL where they use that, 90% of those teams still huddle. So the offense defense still huddle. You talk to one guy, he can echo that message to the huddle. We don't play any offenses that huddle, again, 90% of the time. Right. And so we still have to stay – we can't huddle ourselves because then they're going to be snapping the ball. You're not lined up and ready. So it will help some of our communication, but it doesn't eliminate – I think the big part of the game where we're different is like all the signaling from the sideline. We have to keep that going. I mean, because, you know, at the end of the day, like, everyone's not going to hear that. It's one guy on the field. So, you know, we're going through a lot of different ways of how that's going to be implemented. But I think at the end of the day, a lot of the communication will still be the same.
In NFL, too, the middle linebacker plays 90% of the snaps.
Right.
You guys will sub. There'll be a bunch of different. How difficult is that when you have to think about who's on the field for what package and who's got the green dot?
Yeah, it is, because you only have one guy at a time out there. So, you know, all the guys that have the green dot helmet will have two helmets. But it's still a matter of, you know, you're going to go to this package. Well, that's two guys with the green dot, and then someone's got to get the other helmet. So we've talked through all this stuff, and I'm sure be whatever. I don't think it'll have as major effect on the game as maybe what the intent of it was as a rule change, but we'll see.
It probably help more on offense, right? Because Freeze could talk to Peyton more.
Yeah. I think that's maybe we're getting help. I mean, obviously the quarterback on offense will be wearing it, and now, you know, a lot of these teams line up, right, see the look, and then, you know, signal in the play. We're not only can you signal in the play, you can also tell them, you know, you can explain them what the look is.
Yeah.
Start talking about what the defense is. And so, you know, I think every guy's making a judgment how much information you want to give the guy with the green dot. You don't want guys out there thinking too much, but I think it'll have more effect for offense.
We've heard from the guys that not celebrating on defense is considered a loaf. I guess just your fieriness and your intensity that you want from this group. What's kind of your checklist from a play-to-play basis for those guys?
Yeah, I want guys that, like, have personality, be their own personality. Don't try and be something different, but, like, enjoy what you're doing. When you think about it, like, if you have positive energy about something you're doing, you're probably going to be better at it. And, it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, man, what we get to do is pretty cool. Whether you're playing at Auburn or you're coaching at Auburn or playing in this conference or, like, you know what? Like, yeah, it's hard. It's a lot of work, but it's fun. And we all chose to do it. So let's go show our enjoyment and show our enjoyment for our teammates. And that's all. We're just trying to create an environment where that's welcome and that's okay. Show your personality, man. Have fun. Enjoy it. And then you know, get focused, get ready for the next play.
Would Eugene then be a creative player for you because of what he does?
Say again, Eugene?
That'd be kind of guy. Hey,
that's easy. So I can go reverse with Eugene. I got to tell Eugene.
Slow down.
You got to play the next play. Eugene, man, what a great, like, smile on his face and great approach to everything he does and you know, fun to coach.
What have you learned about him? I mean, obviously you saw him last year. What have you learned about him since the spring now heading into this season?
Well, I mean, just learn as a person. You know, you know him as a player when you're on another team and you see him run around and making plays and you know the player.
Yeah.
Now you know the person. And as great a player he is, he's a better person. And you start to know what makes Eugene tick and what he's been through in life. And it's pretty incredible.
This is kind of an off the beaten path question. Did you ever coach with or learn from Brother Oliver? Bill Oliver?
I have not.
Okay. Mm. I was thinking of you and Will as always being similar.
Okay. Yeah, that's sort of the end there. He just talked about yes, he's heard of Brother Oliver from Will, but he hadn't coached with him. But very energetic guy, and again seems pretty upbeat about the overall defense. Got a lot of questions that we'll start getting answered next week. I do think, as Jason Caldwell was saying in the first hour, though, this Saturday is going to be very important for a lot of the young players. This may be, I don't know that it will be, but I mean, this may be the final close to full scrimmage that Auburn has.
And for some of the young players fighting to be in the rotation.
Yes.
On offense and defense. I mean, there's competition. Even at the spots where you feel like you know the starters, there's still competition to be the next man up or to be on the inside rather than on the outside looking in.
And, just before the end, you heard a question about J.C. Hart, and he talked about just barely scratching the surface there. And Crime Dog, Wesley McGriff, just lit up when he was talking about J.C. Hart, saying the difference from this past year and this spring to right now, the confidence that he has, thinking, you know, I probably can do it. I think I can do it now to he knows he can do it. And he talked about a play that he made just where he saw him. He said just the length and the athletic ability that he has and with his he's also very bright and he remembers things. And he went back to a play that he made where he just turned at the exact time, made the right move, came up and said just showed tremendous athleticism but made a perfect play. And it's like you can't play corner any better than he did on that play. So really excited about the future for the local product in J.C. Hart. And that's great news. Auburn with a lot of young talent back there in the secondary. And I think you're going to get a chance to see both him, Antonio Kite, who had a really good scrimmage. He had said the same thing that Hugh Freeze said last Friday. He said, what did Antonio Kite need to improve on? He said he needed to learn how to practice every day. Said that they knew he had the ability. He's got the length. He's got the ability to make plays. But you've got to bring it every day in practice. And he's starting to see that from Antonio Kite. He looked pretty good in the scrimmage there. But the coaches want to see it, you know, on a consistent basis.
And Antonio Kite was thrust into a big role because with no Keontae at the scrimmage, he was right. The first guy up playing outside corner alongside Kay and Lee. And we've heard some positive things about Antonio. I know Sylvester Smith was vouching for the work Antonio's put in, especially over the last week or so. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I would think that Antonio and JC, to an extent, Jay Crawford, although you factor in that he's
a true freshman,
but you'd think Antonio and JC look like your next guys up there in the secondary.
Yeah, and that's looking forward to them getting the opportunities this fall. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind, 334-321-1390 as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 25 minutes away from 6 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Yeah, we're getting closer. It's hard to believe Jason Caldwell saying that high school football is underway in the state of Georgia. They will play this weekend. Alabama high schools start next week. And then, of course, I mean, we're just 2 weeks away from Saturday from Auburn's opening game against Alabama A&M. So football just about on us. And, of course, you'll be able to hear once again this year Auburn high school football and Lee Scott football right here on the family of stations here at the Auburn Network.
Yeah, really excited to usher in new era of Auburn high school football with Jacob taking the reins for our buddy Scott Bagwell, who served admirably in role for for many years. And yeah, that first game next week, first Tiger Talk next week as well on Wings 94.3.
That is so, right. Tiger Talk coming up Monday.
You know, just like when we tell you, you know, you want the number for Franklin saved in your phone. You don't want to be, you know, having to look it up on the fly when something goes wrong. You want to have that thing ready to go. I would go ahead and have Wings 94.3 keyed in. Have it somewhere on that dial. You know, have mm-hmm. it one of your presets. You know, because you're going to have, you're going to have Auburn University Athletics with Tiger Talk, men's basketball, and all of the football broadcasts on Wings 94.3 and Auburn High School football as well.
Yeah, we're really excited about that and that it's that close. We'd love to hear from you. Your calls come first, but if we don't have calls, we're going to let you hear some more audio from today. And Josh Aldridge last year was the linebackers coach. This year he is moving to defensive ends and Bucks, and he has some talented young men that he is responsible for. And he was the first of the defensive coaches we had a chance to sit down and talk with earlier today.
Please don't say that. You tell him I said that.
We can spend the next 30 minutes just talking about him if you want.
No, I'm good.
No, I'm leaving. We did that.
Well, Justin, just generally, how do you feel about your Buck guys so far, your edge guys?
So, you know, I've got the end and the Buck, both of them primarily. They're doing well. I think I've said before, for me to be able to coach Keldrick and J-Mac, I mean it's pretty good for me. So both those guys are great leaders, just like they're great players, though. So, and then it's really neat, again, like I've said before, the guys behind them are talented young freshmen, right? So I've got the best of both worlds. I've got two talented leaders and then young guys that those guys can help develop. And, you know, it's fun to see young players step up and get better every day. So they've had a good camp, really focusing a lot on getting those guys behind them ready these next couple weeks before our first game.
At defensive end, how much has Amara showed you that he's maybe ready to play fairly early in his career?
Oh, he's showed me plenty. Yeah, he's going to play. He's going to play for sure. So it's just, you know, cleaning up. I mean, he makes plays that he shouldn't make sometimes. Like, he's using bad fundamentals, but he's just such a great athlete. He's so strong that he's like, well, man, it's hard to tell him he's doing wrong because he's still making the play, you know. But that's part of growing and learning, and he's got a great attitude. He's shown me a lot in terms of his effort and in terms of, you know, his natural ability that he'll definitely play for us this year.
And Kieron Crawford, a guy that came in this summer, mm-hmm. what mm-hmm. he's doing to the edge?
He's an elite pass rusher. I mean, he's gonna be something we have not had here in a while. Really excited about that. He's learned how to be an every down player. J-Mac's helping him a lot with that. There's going to be plenty of times where him and J-Mac will be on the field at the same time. He's a real special kid or young man. He's impressed me a lot. So he's just got to learn how to be an every down guy, not just a pass rush guy.
Is he kind of on the ascendancy still, just playing 1 year of high school ball after mm-hmm. switching for basketball?
For sure, yeah. I mean, there's still things he's learning, right? Because, you know, you go play – you don't play much high school football, and then you go to college, and you play in one system there. He played in one system the whole time he was there. So there's plenty of things they didn't do that we do, right? So that he's never learned, you know, that maybe most people have learned to do, but he just didn't learn them in college. And he's still got learning to do there, and that's where that run game stuff comes from, you know what I mean? But when you tell the sucker, hey, go get the quarterback, I mean, he's pretty good at that. So, he's done well.
You have some true freshmen at that position as well. How have they?
Yeah. So we talked about Amaris. Amaris is doing really well. He's more your field end type guy, real strong, but really dynamic. You know, usually that field end, you want to kick inside on third down, kind of like Keldrick does sometimes, but Amaris is twitchy enough. We want to leave him out there on the outside on third down. So he's doing really well. Jamonte is probably kind of a younger version of Kieron, where he's a talented pass rusher. Jamonte probably will help us to rush the passer this year as a freshman. It's just the early down stuff and getting stronger in the weight room to be able to handle that in this league. And then Joe Phillips is the most improved from spring to now. He is the most improved player in our room by far, you know, and he's got a similar story to Kieron. Only one really full year of high school football, a lot of learning to do, but ultra powerful, changed his body. He's like 252 pounds now. So he's going to be a special one down the road as well. So those are my three freshmen.
How about Keldrick as a sophomore to do what he's doing, to be a leader, to be selected to go to SEC Media Days? Your thoughts on just how poised he is for somebody so young?
Yeah, it's hard to believe it. You know, it really is. I mean, he just he feels like older than a sophomore for everybody that was here last year, just because, you know, he was a mid-year enrollee, so he went through the whole spring with us. He was so talented, and we were so thin that he ran a lot with the ones that first spring, and then he starts, what, 8-9 games last year or something like that. So he just feels like a junior, acts like a junior. He takes a lot of responsibility in those young guys learning what to do, which is great for me, makes my job easier. It's just really special to coach a guy like that.
Josh, you got a lot of different type of guys. Mm-hmm. How beneficial is that you have some different guys you can give different looks with?
Yeah, I think we talked about it before down here. I mean, you got to have a dynamic room at whatever position you coach, right? If you coach receivers, you don't want receivers that only can do this, right? You're gonna face teams week to week that you need to attack different ways, and if you don't have guys who can do different things, you're not going to be able to do that. You don't want a bunch of one-trick ponies in any position. I think it just makes it great for Coach Durkin and our defensive coaches that we've got defensive ends and defensive linemen who can line up anywhere from a 9 technique to a 3. I mean, that's what you're talking about. You got, like, Keldrick could line up from a 9 technique all the way to a 3 technique. You know, J-Mac could line up from a 9 technique all the way to a 4-eye, you know. Just those guys being able to handle that helps our defense in general.
When Keron went in the portal, what was it that really stood out about him and it made him seem like a target?
Raw potential. We needed more pass rushers, and he was probably the best pass rusher in the portal, in my opinion. I'm not just saying that just because we got him, but I really thought he was the best pass rusher in the portal. We actually recruited him at Liberty. In high school, we just kind of filled up on spots. That was back when you could only sign 25 a year and all that stuff. And then obviously with the Briarcrest connections with Coach Freeze and things like that. But just in terms of his ability, we needed pass rushers, and I knew he could do that.
What would you say Morris's greatest strength is right now, as you know, what he brings to the table for you?
How naturally strong he is. You know what I mean? I mean, you look at that guy turned – so his birthday was yesterday. He turned 18 yesterday. And he is as strong as anybody on this football team. So it's pretty incredible to think about his potential to be a guy who just turned 18 going into his freshman year in SEC football. His just natural strength and to be twitchy for a big guy. I mean, he's 260 pounds already and moves like a buck. You know, he's really athletic. So I'd say that.
What about Keldrick? What's gonna take him from, you know, his true freshman year, and now he's entering, he's got all these accolades, preseason accolades. What does he need to do to take the next step?
I mean, I'd just say consistency. Yeah. You know, I mean, as a freshman, he flashed. You know, he'll tell you he struggled, like, against LSU, and there were a couple other games. But I think you just see so much more consistency out of him now, right? He's not feeling his way through anything. He knows it, right? He knows the things to expect from a physicality standpoint, from a mental standpoint, all those things. And then the other thing is, you know, he moved around a lot last year. He played inside some. Then he played on the edge, you know, just because that's what we needed him to do. Him being able to focus on being a defensive end for the majority of the season, he's going to move inside some, don't get me wrong. But him focusing on that, I think, is helping his game, right? You can really hone in on that.
Where did Jalen need to improve after last season? Where did you feel like, you know, that there was still growth for him, and how's his offseason been?
I'd say in the run game. You know, he was never bad in the run game, but just the consistency of it. I think a lot of that, though, had to do with him not being healthy. And so him taking care of his body and being healthy, I think, is going to give him a better body of work when he chooses to enter the draft after this year. So I'm really excited about that for him.
Josh, it was a big summer for you guys recruiting, getting a bunch of commitments, mm-hmm. especially there late July. What is it right now that you think has all these kids buying into Auburn?
Proof of concept, you know. We didn't have necessarily the year internally that we wanted to have, but I think as – you know, we don't have the proof of concept of winning 10 games yet, right? But we do have the proof of concept of we just signed a really good class, sold them on how it's going to be, and the DeMarcus Riddicks of the world, right? The Caleb Harrises of the world, you know, they're able to tell all these people, yeah, it's true. You know, it is like this here, you know, and things like that. So I think proof of concept through those other recruits that we have signed is helping us.
Josh, when you look at your unit, your ability to pressure the line of scrimmage, make plays in the backfield, pressure the quarterback, sack the quarterback, how much has that changed from this time last year to now?
That Josh Aldridge, Auburn's defensive ends and Buck coach earlier today, as yes, we had a chance to visit with the defensive coaches today for the Tigers as they get ready for another big Saturday of practice. We've got a couple more media opportunities this week. Looking forward to that before classes get started on Monday.
Yeah, got a lot of media Friday, right? Isn't that the day we got, you know?
We got post, yeah.
Karen Hoppe, right? Isn't that all? I think
we get pre-practice.
We get Hugh Freeze. We get Karen Hoppe. We get a viewing window.
Viewing window, and then we get post-practice.
And we get players after practice is over. That's all on Friday. Tomorrow we have players after practice before the start of the show. So it should be a couple solid days of access before Monday. They have to change the schedule up because classes get started on campus.
Yep. All right, we will get to our final break here of the Wednesday Drive. Still time for you to join us if you'd like, 334-321-1390. We'll be right back here on the Wednesday Drive.
Attention, large.